This episode is brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider. Delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Cambie,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
American Ryan Krauser, who grew up in Boring, is a two-time gold medalist and world record holder. Krauser set a new record distance in the shot put Thursday and took home his second gold at the Tokyo Games. Krauser took home the gold with a huge 23.30-meter throw, 76.44 feet, on his final attempt, dedicating the victory to his late grandfather, Larry Krauser, who died a week before the opening ceremony. An emotional Krauser had a piece of paper with him and held it up at the cameras. "Grandpa, we did it. 2020 Olympic champion," written in Sharpie. Krauser later explains the full significance of the message. His grandfather had lost his hearing before his death, and letters were how the two would communicate. The world-class athlete first attempted the shot put in Larry Krauser's backyard. "To lose him the week before the Olympics was obviously sad," he told reporters, "but I feel like he was able to be here in spirit." Krauser was the first American male to win gold at track and field events this summer. The same time that you're cheering the most fantastic thing, there's a little bit of, "I just wish Grandpa was here," Ryan's mother Lisa said while celebrating back in Oregon. "You know, he's watching." Krauser's teammate Joe Kovacs finished with the silver medal. Tom Walsh of New Zealand took home the bronze. Krauser won the gold medal at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. Ironically, Kovacs and Walsh had also been the runners-up in those games. Krauser was born in Portland in December 1992 and raised in Boring. He comes from a long line of elite throwers. His father, Mitch Krauser, was an alternate on the 1984 Olympic discus team. His uncle, Brian Krauser, qualified for two Olympic teams in the javelin. His other uncle, Dean Krauser, was a good shot putter and discus thrower, and his cousins, Sam and Haley, are both javelin throwers. He took up track and field in fifth grade, but was not initially as good as his cousin Sam. He made his breakthrough in eighth and ninth grade. In 2009, his sophomore year at Sam Barlow High School in Gresham, Krauser set a national sophomore record with the 3.58-pound, or 1.62 kg, high school discus, throwing a 202 feet and 6 inches, which is 61.72 meters. The mark was also the Oregon High School state record until Sam Krauser broke it in the following year. In 2020, he was named the finalist for Male Track and Field World Athlete of the Year by World Athletics, the international governing body for track and field. To vax or not to vax? That is the question now facing Oregon healthcare workers after Governor Kate Brown announced new rules requiring weekly COVID-19 testing, which can be waived if a worker is vaccinated and willing to show proof to their employer. The new rules take effect on September 30, officials say, to give workplaces time to prepare for increased testing and unvaccinated employees time to get their shots if they choose to. The policy is generally viewed, positively or negatively, depending on one's perspective, as a creative potential workaround to a 32-year-old state law that prohibits healthcare facilities from mandating vaccines, any vaccines, for their workers. Only Oregon has such a law on the books. Brown has vowed to push lawmakers to address the issue in February's legislative session. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, which is the nation's largest healthcare provider, announced last month it would require about 115,000 of its frontline healthcare workers to take the COVID-19 vaccine, while California became the first state to mandate it for most healthcare workers just this week. The more contagious Delta variant has changed everything, the governor said in her announcement this week. This new safety measure is necessary to stop Delta from causing severe illness among our first line of defense, our doctors, nurses, medical students, and frontline healthcare workers. Brown said the new policy, which applies to personnel who have a direct or indirect contact with sick people or infectious materials, will also enhance safety and improve outcomes for patients. Severe illness from COVID-19 is now largely preventable, and vaccination is clearly our best defense, she said. Vaccination and weekly testing ensure Oregonians can safely access healthcare and employees can go to work in an environment that maximizes health and safety measures for COVID-19. The new rule also has the support of industry groups like the Oregon Nurses Association. This is a reasonable and sensible approach which respects the individual choices of healthcare workers while also protecting public health, said ONA spokesman Scott Palmer. ONA believes COVID-19 vaccinations are critical to protecting our members, patients, families, and our communities, and we urge all Oregonians who can get vaccinated to do so now. Palmer said his organization has been working with hospitals and community groups to address the rampant disinformation that is creating uncertainty and fueling vaccine hesitancy. Vaccination is a critical tool to keep Oregonians healthy and safe, and Governor Brown's announcement today will help close the gap in vaccination rates for Oregon's valuable healthcare workers, Palmer said. Barely a month after appearing to have turned a corner, the state is grappling with not only a resurgence, but one of the largest increases in new cases and hospitalizations since the pandemic first hit Oregon in March 2020. Oregon reported 2,056 confirmed and presumptive cases on Monday, the highest single day total since December 4, and more than 1,000 new infections every day this week, with the exception of Friday, which had 970. Health officials say the surge has been driven by the highly contagious Delta variant, now the dominant variant in the state of Oregon, and has disproportionately harmful to the unvaccinated, which account for 81% of the new cases, 93% of hospitalizations, and 99% of deaths. The data continues to suggest that while all forms of COVID-19 can still infect vaccinated individuals, it happens less often and tends to result in far less severe cases. The Canby Kiwanis Kitty Caper Parade has been the traditional kickoff for the Clackamas County Fair since 1948, interrupted only by COVID-19 in 2020. Along with the fair itself, the parade is back this year, and organizers are hoping children from all over Clackamas County will participate with their families. Canby Kiwanis encourages kids to dress in costumes and walk or ride a decorated bike, or for families and neighborhoods to create their own decorated floats, said parade chair Luana Hill. It's a sweet old-fashioned parade, and we encourage kids to decorate and dress up, especially using the annual theme of the fair. This year, it's back in the saddle. Kiwanis awards first, second, and third place ribbons, and in some categories, cash prizes for participants. Participating children receive ribbons, and they and an accompanying adult receive a free ticket until they're gone for entry into the fair. The ticket is good until 1 p.m. on August 17th. Registration begins at 8 a.m. on August 17th at the corner of Northwest 5th and North Grant in Canby. All entries should be in their category area by 9 a.m. when judging begins. The parade steps off at 10 a.m. and arrives to open the fair before 11 a.m. Registration is required in order to participate. A parent or guardian must sign for their child. So for convenience, large groups can print the registration form from the Canby Kiwanis website and have it filled out before the day of the parade. Major construction is going on at Knight and Eccles Elementary School, where the parade starts. This year, the playgrounds are not accessible and registration tables will be in the street. Canby Kiwanis will also be providing a free bike decorating event in Waite Park on August 16th from 3 to 5 p.m. Kids can bring their bikes to decorate at no cost. Kiwanis is unable to provide overnight storage this year due to the school construction project, so participants will need to take the decorated bikes home overnight. There will be lots of flowers, streamers, and fun one-of-a-kind items to make for a festive parade. We and Kiwanis are hoping to have our biggest turnout in years, Hill said. We sense a lot of enthusiasm for fun things to do with kids, and the fair always offers a great family experience. For more details and registration forms, visit canbykiwanis.org. A Jervis man was killed in a crash in northern Marion County Sunday afternoon. Deputies said at 1 p.m. Sunday, a 911 caller reported a serious crash on Way Park Drive Northeast, east of Howell Prairie Road Northeast. Investigators found that a 2019 Chevrolet Corvette was driving eastbound and hit a 2005 Ford Explorer that was driving westbound. The passenger in the Chevrolet Corvette, 57-year-old Erwafre Cam, did not survive the crash. Both drivers sustained minor injuries and were taken to a nearby hospital, according to the Marion County Sheriff's Office. The Sheriff's Office was assisted by the Kaiser Police Department, Marion County District Attorney's Office, Marion County Public Works, Mount Angel Fire District, and Woodburn Ambulance. The Wilsonville Police Department is asking for the public's help to find a missing tortoise that crawled out of a pet store on July 9th and was then taken from a nearby intersection by an unknown woman. Deputies contracted to Wilsonville PD responded to the Critter Cabana pet store around 1:15 p.m. on July 9th. A sales associate told deputies that a 30-year-old, 25-pound sulcata tortoise named Walter had crawled out of the store after a customer had left the door to the store propped open. The sales associate told deputies it was not uncommon for Walter to crawl out of the store. The tortoise was described as surprisingly fast and smart. Then someone reportedly saw a woman grab Walter at a nearby intersection. The passerby told deputies he was driving near Southwest Holly Street and Southwest Jessica Street in Wilsonville when he saw the tortoise in the middle of the intersection. The press release said the passerby put on his hazard lights to slow surrounding traffic and pulled out his phone to call Critter Cabana, correctly surmising the animal had escaped from the pet store, when a woman walked out from in between two apartment buildings to the east. The witness described the person as a thin white female, age 40 to 50, with long blonde hair. According to the witness, the woman shouted that she planned to take the tortoise and wrapped Walter in a blanket. "My neighbor has a turtle," the woman reportedly told the passerby. "I think this might be my neighbor's. I'm going to take it to them." Walter reportedly weighs 25 pounds, is around 30 years old, is valued at $1,300, and has a brother named Wesley who resides at the store. A staff member who works at the store described Walter as relaxed. They said tortoises are allowed to wander the store and that this is an attraction to customers. This tortoise, who is a sulcata species, had yet to be found Tuesday morning, according to the staffer. To provide information about Walter's location, use the police department's tip line. Call 503-723-4949 or use the email form at clackamas.us/sheriff/tip.
Hi, I'm Megan Waterman. I'm the owner and operator of the Book Nook in Canby, Oregon.
And I'm Tyler Clausen of Now Hear This Canby, the show you're listening to. Megan, the Book Nook is one of my favorite places in all of Canby. It's a one-stop shop for gifts, board games, new books, used books, and books from local authors. Why did you decide to open it?
Well, I love the power of a story. I love how reading about different people and places, times, stretches my mind. It makes me see the world differently, whether that's a fantasy story or a biography. It all changes the lens that I see and how I interact with people. The reason that we added games to our store is for that same reason. It's just a different way to experience story through gameplay.
And along with new selection, you're at a new location, right?
We are. We just moved, technically just across the intersection to the old Parsons building. We've expanded our space and also our selection. So we've got more books, more gifts. We added a larger gaming section. And now with the world opening back up a little bit more, we're starting to relaunch some of our events. We have relaunched our general fiction and our fantasy book clubs, and those are going great. And we're about ready to kick off game nights, starting with our beginner Dungeons & Dragons camp, led by Camby's very own Tyler Clausen.
Hey, that's me! If you're interested in D&D, make sure you stop by the Book Nook and get more information about role-playing opportunities there.
Yeah, or stop by any time and chat with one of our booksellers about their current book recommendations and let us help you find your next favorite read. We're now open on Sundays as well, so we're there 7 days a week.
Nice. The Book Nook is in downtown Camby or online at booknookcamby.com.
Hey James, what's going on with the internet? The Wi-Fi is all spotty.
Well, is it your internet or the Wi-Fi?
What are you talking about? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, kind of, but no. You see, your home or office accesses the internet through underground fiber cables from DirectLink. It's actually your Wi-Fi router that converts that internet connection into an over-the-air signal for all your wireless devices.
Okay, you lost me at kind of?
Why don't we even try? Look, you have seen like a box-looking device around the studio here. It's probably hidden under, it's under a thick layer of dust.
No, I don't. Oh, wait, is it that blinky flashy thing behind the stack of old pizza boxes?
Yeah, yes, it's the blinky flashy thing. That's the Wi-Fi equipment that connects your iPad, your PlayStation, and the laptop to the internet.
I bought that off Craigslist like 8 years ago.
Frankie, I think we just found your problem. Your Wi-Fi equipment is ancient. Electronics, they get old fast. And even when new software updates or faster broadband comes out, your old router just can't keep up. It's like expecting a Model T to outpace those new F-150 Lightnings.
Great. So now I have to make Tyler go buy, I have to go buy a whole new Wi-Fi setup? How does he, I even know what to get?
Look, I'm gonna make it simple. Just call DirectLink, man. Their professional grade Wi-Fi equipment is super affordable, and they'll manage the updates and the network security for you. They'll even help you install your new router in the perfect spot to get the strongest possible signal. You can visit directlink.coop/Wi-Fi to get started.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to make Tyler call DirectLink today. Alright, well, joining us again are Daryl and Amy Lenhart. Hey guys.
Hello. Hi there.
They are restoring, and the owners of the Whiskey Hill store out in what's known as Whiskey Hill, technically Hubbard, right?
Yep.
Across
yes.
from 91 School.
Yep.
It's been, we were just talking, it's been about a year since we were last out here, and it's also the first time we've ever interviewed you without a small child running around. So a lot, lots of differences for us and for the listeners. And things are looking extremely different inside of the historic store here.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe what's going on now, what's happened over the past year?
All right.
Man, what's happened over the last year is
yeah.
so much.
Right, how much time do we have? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when you came out here, I think the front of the building was on jacks.
Yes.
And so we were in the process of
stabilizing,
going around the building, lifting it, getting it back plumb, and we had to put a sections of new foundation.
And underneath
that's the,
it.
That's the original bell tower.
That is the original bell tower. Yeah. Yes. And the bell tower, the front of the bell tower had been sagging really badly.
Yeah.
And so that was all lifted and stabilized, and an all new foundation was put underneath the kind of the entire front porch of the building.
Yeah.
And then we had spent time opening up the north wall, mm-hmm. kind of revealing all of the old schoolhouse windows that had been covered up with various layers of paneling and siding and other things. Mm-hmm. And then...
Did a couple of the windows need to be replaced? I know people ask about the windows a lot.
A few panes.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's it.
The window to the... For this west,
yeah.
even though, you know, our building sits at an angle, but we just, that's what we call it.
Right.
For this west.
Cardinal directions.
It was the only window that wasn't covered okay. at all, inside or outside.
Okay.
It had been painted with several layers on the outside.
Okay.
And so there's 18 panes, and I think 7 or 9 of them were broken.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was in bad shape, but there's only one other small crack in all of the windows that were covered.
Yeah.
So, and yeah.
And the outside, obviously, for folks that have driven by, could notice a very dramatic change. Did you just repaint or did you redo that or
no,
the facade?
No, that north wall where all the windows are, all of the siding around all the windows up to the chimney was removed. That entire wall was
okay.
stripped bare.
Yeah.
And then it was covered with plywood, and then we put all new siding
okay.
on it.
It looks great.
And then most of the north wall to the west of the chimney was all original. And then this in this northwest corner, this wall was in such bad shape. We not only had to jack up this corner, we had to restore the foundation. We took out... They had put schoolhouse, the big 9-foot schoolhouse windows in the front years ago.
Uh-huh.
There was actually 3 of them. But in putting in that much glass, they had weakened the structure so bad. So we had to go through and we basically restored the 2 small windows, which was the original 1920s look.
Yeah.
When the building was...
We replaced those.
But
they were gone.
Yeah, they were gone. Those
but
are.
But the structure was here.
Those are antique windows that are of the same size and
I was going to say, it's got that wavy look mm-hmm. to the glass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
yeah.
They were marked 1904.
Okay.
I found that as I was restoring them.
Very cool.
Yeah, so that was all rebuilt. That was the crazy one that, you know, the building was moved. And
right.
that's what we realized.
This was the original school, originally in the location where the
where
new
91
school is.
Yeah,
91,
so
yeah.
moved across the street.
Moved across the street, and the groan happened the day that when mm-hmm. we did finally jack up that corner because it was just full of rot and in really bad shape. And I got the walls plumb, and we were thinking, well, all I have to do is come in, and we're going to put some new block foundation on top of the original footing,
mm-hmm.
and we should be fine. Until I realized that when they had moved the building, they didn't align
yeah.
the foundation.
Yeah, what footing?
So the footing was there, but the reason why that corner was so bad was the footing was
off.
Was off. It
yeah.
was to the end.
It was close.
It was close. It was sitting about 3 inches, which is
right.
fine for horseshoes, but not great for building foundations.
Close enough to hold up for what about 80 years?
Yeah, it held. It held up. It pretty much was gone.
Yeah.
For the last 5, probably.
Yeah. yeah.
And that's why that corner was crumbling.
Yeah.
Yeah. That corner, I could stick my hand out
yeah.
through that corner.
So that
yeah. that's how much
the day I realized that the foundation they put underneath it wasn't aligned right. It led to me getting a jackhammer and tearing out everything, and then my son helped my son primarily doing the digging,
yeah.
the hard
yeah.
work, digging out all for all new footings
under the wall that was hanging on jacks.
Yeah.
So the yeah. walls hanging and the rotten 2x4s, and we cut those off, and he dug
yeah.
and moved wheelbarrow after wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. So that was. That was some hard, hard, dirty work.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Things inside look very different as well. Obviously, you've already mentioned how you opened up these beautiful windows on the north side that everybody talks about and are so striking anybody that drives by.
Yeah.
And are really one of the kind of central features of this historic building.
And then
so that
ceilings.
Provided a lot of light, but you kind of opened up and changed things in here as well.
Yeah, all the ceilings. Because somewhere in the 70s, they decided they had put structure in to bring a false ceiling down to about 9 feet.
Right, I remember
and they'd
that.
And they sheetrocked it. And so now when you walk in, people are like, they don't even recognize, because they're like, what is this? Because if the only really, really old timers that knew it as a school recognize it. But people that came into the store were like, I've never seen this before.
Yeah.
And so now you're seeing 13-foot ceilings of all the original schoolhouse beadboard.
Yeah.
And we decided on this side, we weren't going to do it over here. Mm-hmm. This is going to be kind of our grocery and deli area on the south side here, and we were going to keep that lowered ceiling, but the more we started thinking about it, we're like, let's just go ahead and take this out as well.
Yeah.
So now you see it on both sides of the building.
Yeah.
And then this framing, so now we have a bathroom, public bathroom, then we have a storage and mop closet, and then behind that will be kitchen over on the south side, and then it'll have rows of coolers and freezers in that kind of notch behind the bathroom.
Are you guys still thinking drive up coffee service here under the old bell tower?
That's our hope.
Okay. Cool. And then seating and things over here. Okay. And some of your displays, Amy, right? Of
Vintage and antique furniture. And this will be barista area and...
Oh, you got a wood stove or a pellet stove?
Oh,
A pellet stove.
So that brick face that you're seeing on the inside is brick that was from the second chimney that was on the east side of the building.
Oh, cool.
That we took down brick by brick last summer. And then chipped
your post about that.
Chipped all the mortar off. And those bricks have the kids' names carved and written on them.
Yeah.
And so that's been refaced
with
them.
Some of Daryl's relatives, right?
Well, we haven't researched the exact. Well,
we can show you one of them that we
initials
we saved, and we turned it
out.
This one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it says John Fisher. Well, we've learned a lot. I have a cousin, Seth Fisher, that's a descendant. So this would have been his great uncle.
Wow.
And it was his great grandfather was the one that owned this property and moved
the building.
Yeah. So it was a Joel Fisher. So this was one of his sons.
Yeah.
Joel Fisher owned Donald Brick and Tile. So we think John probably carved his initials on a brick before it went through and got fired.
Yeah.
So that's the flat side of the brick.
Yeah.
It was covered by mortar.
Right.
So when I chipped it off, and sometimes the mortar would come off in big pieces, and sometimes it crumbled.
Yeah.
But that particular piece, the entire thing popped off, and his name appeared.
Just revealed.
So he had signed it, you know, and then, you know, when the brick was made, and then we placed it.
We found quite a few things, pieces that we've taken out of the building that had Joel Fisher's initials on them, because he obviously bought them to bring over here when they moved it.
Yeah.
And then we've talked to other descendants of the family to learn a lot about. So yeah, the Fishers are very instrumental in this building sitting where it does today.
Yeah. Well, we're going to head over now and see your living quarters, which weren't more than just designs, I think, when we were out here before.
Yeah.
And just a part of this story as well that I think, you know, I maybe told in some of the stories or maybe in the podcast, but I don't know if people really realize that you guys are obviously doing a lot of this work. You're living here on site.
Be careful. There's, I think there's a hole there.
Okay.
Just step over it to be safe. There.
But you guys are living in an RV with all this crazy stuff that's been going on from the heat dome to the ice storm to the lack of power for
2 weeks.
More than 2 weeks, was it?
Yeah.
And what's kept you going through all that?
The Lord
and
prayer and
amazing family and support, and my amazing husband.
Yeah.
He's kept us going.
Yeah.
She says, I don't complain. I do.
Yeah.
I grumble.
No, you don't. I whine enough for both of us.
I grumble every once in a while. But,
I you think know. You deserve a grumble every now and then, yeah, for all this stuff. Yeah, quite the adventure. Maybe a little more than you expected, but worth it, I hope.
It's way more than I expected.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be worth it when it's done, because every single person says that to us.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure you feel that if you see it taking shape.
Yeah.
It will be a beautiful, the store is going to be beautiful. The house is going to be beautiful. It's going to be a very comfortable place to live. And, you know, another season to, you know, garden and landscape and kind of bring it all up to what we really envision it. And it's going to be just like, you know, corner just for people to just come and really enjoy.
I'm just wondering about Amy's fantasies at this point. Like, there's a show Breaking Bad where they had an RV and they just crushed it at the end. And I'm just wondering if Amy has fantasies about what she's going to do when you guys can finally move out of that.
That's funny, because there's another Breaking Bad connection, too.
Oh, you guys cook meth? No.
There was an ATM right inside the front door. When I've only seen like two episodes of Breaking Bad with my teenage son years ago, because I was like trying to connect with him. I couldn't do it. But one of them was the ATM episode.
Yes.
And so when we came here, there was an ATM, and I'd like to think maybe they were trying to remove it, mm-hmm. but it was like mangled and all this stuff, and it sat there for months.
Yeah.
And we didn't know how we were gonna get it out. Yeah. His brother came with welding equipment and cut it, and so
We're in the house now. Daryl, I know you have some stuff to tell us about. You guys are doing some cool things in here, some kind of energy efficient type add-ons that are and some techniques that are not even as green as this area is out here, that are a little more unusual for our area, from what I understand.
It is a very unusual design. Kind of drove my architect a little bit crazy.
Yeah, we don't have 13-foot ceilings in here.
No, there's no 13-foot ceilings. 9-foot ceilings, very typical of a, you know, modern U.S. home. But the big difference is just in all my study about homes and energy efficiency was studying. There's an area home development people refer to as passive houses.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty cool, I mean, they tend to be pretty exotic. People try to build homes that literally, they're all the way down to like, how do we orient the house on the property to
these zero imprint type design.
Yeah, I would be completely off the grid. I'm going to get all my heating from solar radiance throughout the day.
I'm going to have birds living in the chimney.
So I didn't want to quite go those extremes. But the one thing was that I learned just from, you know, all of the reading and all the building sciences, you know, energy efficiency is not just about packing your walls with insulation, but it's making your house as airtight as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, that's why you seal a lid on a thermos. You know, it, you don't want airflow out of your house or into your house, depending on the time of year.
Right.
And that's an area that I think the typical house is, you know, kind of weak in how they come up with designs. So I look for a lot of different products that are out there. The Europeans tend to be way out in front of us.
Yeah.
And so I came across this high performance building supply that has these products that come from Germany. And so
we're Germans.
The Germans, yes. And so On the outside, we're using house wraps like you're supposed to, but we're picking some that are really well engineered to deal with not letting air in, letting any water vapor that might be in your house out.
Cool.
And then on the inside, you see this Intello product. You typically don't worry about an air barrier. People just put up sheetrock on their studs and they mud and tape the sheetrock, and that they call that that's
the air seal standard.
That's going to air seal your house.
Yeah,
and they might put some spray foam here or there and things like that. Well, our house has this air barrier product. It's It starts at the foundation, which was one of the things I pushed for, was there's no crawl space, so there's no wood, there's no gaps down to the ground. It's solid concrete.
Yeah.
And then the air barrier products is sealed to the concrete.
Oh, I see that. Yeah.
And it goes up the walls, and then when we framed the structure, you see the black material.
Yep.
So we had them integrate in this air barrier product as they framed. So it then wrapped its way up to the second floor, and then we, on the second floor, we pick up this white Intello again up to the ceiling, and then the Intello's on the ceiling.
Yeah.
So the entire inside of the house is one continuous envelope.
Interesting.
Over 70 years ago, a seed was planted in the rich, fertile soil of North Cambie. The seed was Swan Island dahlias, and today it has blossomed and grown into the largest leading dahlia grower on planet Earth. Family owned and operated, Swan Island is one of Oregon's premier agrotourism destinations, boasting 375 varieties and 40 acres of gorgeous blooms. A sea of color that is among the most jaw-dropping and unforgettable sights in the entire Pacific Northwest. While their fields and annual Dahlia Festival justifiably get a lot of attention, Swan Island has a lot of amenities you may not know about. Their selection of gifts, gardening supplies, and other unique finds is among the most expansive in Cambie area, and their fresh cut flower shop, it's always worth stopping for. This summer, Swan Island is featuring a rotating menu of delicious food trucks Thursday through Sunday and a wide variety of fun classes for all interests and ability levels. The Dahlia Farm will also be hosting a local farmers market every Friday and live music shows through September. Swan Island and their amazing dahlia fields are open 6 days a week, 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., closed Wednesdays. For class registration, concert schedule, or more information, visit dahlias.com or follow Swan Island Dahlias on Facebook and Instagram.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Cambie. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Cambie a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months. Sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
But there's a vapor barrier under the concrete slab that covers the rock that's under there.
Yeah.
And it comes up and it's wrapped around the footing and then the entire thing is in a big
bubble. Yeah.
Wow, yeah, that is really interesting. And you know, we joke, or I joked about the German thing, but that's actually, you go back to when, you know, people were settling in this area and building places like this original schoolhouse. There were a lot of German immigrants and a lot of influence from the old world. So it is interesting in a very modern and new way. Mm-hmm. Some of that is being implemented into this edition.
Yeah. So that was, you know, things like putting in the radiant floor heat. Mm-hmm. So we have hot water tubes that will run through the floor, and that will be our primary heating source.
Nice.
Because the house is so tight, we incorporated another kind of piece of mechanics that is, again, very popular in Europe. It's called a technical term is an HRV, a heat recovery ventilation. But it's just a...
So we are going to keep the RV.
It's a mechanical ventilation system, so mm-hmm. it's very purposeful, and the house is super, super tight. So now yeah. I have one place that I go outside, yeah. I draw fresh air in, and it brings it through a fan and a heat exchanger. So as it pulls air out of the house, it's replacing it with fresh air, so the house is always balanced.
Yeah.
And then you're very specific about, where do I want to pull air out of the house? So I want to pull it from places that create moisture or smells.
Right.
So all the bathrooms, the laundry room, the kitchen, all have air pulled out.
Yeah.
And then fresh air is brought in through a filter. It's then conditioned up as close as you can get it back to room temperature, and then pushed to your bedrooms and your living space.
Yeah. See, in our house, I'd pull all the air out of my son's room. that seems to be the sticky place. In my experience.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the, you know, that's...
I love it.
That's,
I think,
a piece
it's really
of the
cool.
tech.
Yeah.
And then one of the other crazy things that we designed in, that I had to, again, do a lot of research on, was, you'll see these, like right here, this great big valve.
Okay. This is for your water, or for your...
It's one of the drains. This is the wastewater from the washing machine.
Okay.
And... So everything that's upstairs, there's laundry upstairs, and there's three bathrooms upstairs.
Oh, interesting.
So the master tub, master shower, two guest showers, and the laundry
gravity
all come down, and they feed through this diverter.
Yeah.
And so, in, you know, whatever time of year, if it's not a time of year that you want irrigation, you turn the diverter and you just run it through the... out to the drain field, just like all the rest of your wastewater.
It's a gray water collection system.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, so this is considered gray water.
Right.
That it's just, you've ran it through a shower, so it might have a little bit of soap in it and things like that.
Yeah.
And then if I divert it, I'll have a separate tank to run all these sources to, and then we'll feed that through an irrigation system, and we'll water a lot of the fruit trees and other plants in our yard.
Yeah.
So you can't water annual edibles like tomatoes and basil and things like that that you grow yearly, but anything that's permanently in the ground you can use. So for any yeah. fruit trees. So we have figs, grapes, and things out there that we'll be able to water, and then we'll add to that as well.
I love it.
But it's one of those elements that it took a lot of... Like, the county wasn't familiar with it, so their yeah. kind of initial response was no.
Yeah. Did you get that a lot from the county?
Yeah. It was
No comment.
But actually, the folks at the Oregon DEQ up in Portland were actually the ones, they have a really good website that describes it. They were very, very pro, you know, like,
yeah.
hey, we want to help you through this process. Thankfully, his son is an environmental science major, so
nice.
He did a whole bunch of the
design
and calculations they wanted.
Yeah,
but
very cool.
The county officials, once they saw me push for this, were actually then really like excited about it.
Yeah,
the building officials were excited about it.
Yeah,
the plumbing department understands now. Oh, DEQ permits what happens outside of the home. Plumbing just has to permit that you put in the right way yeah. to get it out of the house. I wish more people would think this way, because out here, I mean,
oh yeah,
you're taking
all that water. Yeah.
All that water, we figure as much as 160 gallons a day.
Yeah,
that we could generate out of the house that can go for secondary uses.
Right, right.
And I'm not pulling fresh water out of my well to do that.
Yeah.
And our plumber was a little bit hesitant because yeah. he'd never installed one before.
Mm-hmm.
But when it was done, he said, you know, it really wasn't that much extra work.
Yeah.
Because we have to put a drain in and, you know, you guys got the valve, I installed the valve, and is there one extra pipe to the holding tank?
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So it's
not a big extra cost. It's a little bit of extra work up front in the design phase of a house, but especially if you're on a well,
yeah,
it's really, really worth it.
Yeah. And just to me, a little bit of that, and we talked about this back during the ice storm, but a little bit of that Whiskey Hill community kind of self-reliant spirit of independence. So.
Well, yeah, and that I feel like a sense of stewardship. You know, yeah, it's like you're doing the right thing, and people are like, well, you save energy. Well, it's not so much the electricity. It doesn't take a lot of electricity to run the well pump, but it's the life of the well.
Yeah.
You only have so much groundwater, and the more you pull out of there, just the faster you may have to be in a position of drilling a new well.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, if you can get a second use out of it, why not, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you talk about the insulation? Because you've talked about the wrap, but mm-hmm. our walls, we basically have double walls.
Okay.
So we have 2x6 framing, mm-hmm. standard wood framing, that's filled with blown in, basically, and some rigid foam insulation.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's finishing up the inner
second layer
wall.
I see that now. I do
steel studs.
I thought we were just I didn't notice that this is a second wall on top of a wall. Yeah,
and the reason I did this was two things. So now all the key insulation is behind this air barrier, and there's nothing puncturing it.
Yeah,
so now when I run wires and I put holes in the wall for like outlets and switches
through. Yeah,
it doesn't impact my insulation at all.
Wow.
It is completely sealed in behind this product. I'll have additional, about 2 inches of insulation in these.
Mm-hmm.
The thing they talk about with, again, making a house energy efficient is another, you know, nerdy term is they call it a thermal bridge.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that most homes, there's siding, there's a stud, and then there's drywall.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the drywall gets warm, and the heat just goes right through that stud to the outside.
Right.
Wood does not retain, or insulate well.
Yeah.
And so, but now I will have insulation. All of these studs are offset from the wood ones.
Okay. Cool.
So there's no bridge. There's no touching of the warm drywall to anything that can have a direct path to the outside of the house.
Okay. Cool. That's amazing.
So, and Daryl's doing all of the electrical in the house himself. So, all...
Is that why it looks like such a mess? No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
It's a thing of beauty.
It's a work in progress.
It is a work in progress.
So, all the things that he's talked about so far, the wraps, the radiant heat, the HRV, the steel studs, and the electrical, those are things that we've done ourselves with our own four hands with a lot of help as well.
Yeah.
So this process, once it got framed, has been it's been very painful and it's been slow.
Yeah.
But obviously where you can see here, we're getting to the end of that. Once he gets the steel studs in, then the hard part of the electrical is already done, either behind the walls or you can see it in the ceiling.
Right.
And then, you know, he's going to install
I told my brother inside. I have about 20 outlets to put in, and I have a handful of switches to put in, and that's it.
Yeah.
But, the main panel's in, and most of these are all the home runs, they call it, out to here, and then we just have to run the actual outlets around the kitchen and a few other places.
Yeah. Well, I love it. I love that as you're doing this restoration and build on process, there's so much of this kind of unique and creativity and ingenuity and just real thoughtfulness going into this additional add-on. And it's comfortable in here. It's like 98 degrees out here. There's no electricity or anything. But just standing here in the house such as it is right now, it's comfortable.
If you're just standing, if you're working.
If you're working, it's probably a little hot.
This house would be.
We don't call this working, what I'm doing.
Okay. So,
yeah, that's definitely not what Daryl does.
Laboring.
Yes, not laboring.
Once it's up and it's closed up and, you know, it sits here behind the store, so we hardly have any windows to the south and none to the west.
Yeah.
So all that hot afternoon sun will all be blocked by the store.
Yeah.
And so the home itself,
very comfortable.
I barely will have to run any air conditioning or heating.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
keep this house very, very temperate.
Yeah. Cool. Our main source of heat will be the radiant floor heat.
Yeah.
And then another aspect of the energy efficiency is mini splits. So that we'll have one mini split on the first floor.
I see that.
So that's going to be above the refrigerator. Yeah. So hopefully not too, you know, the big huge thing, be kind of hidden. And yeah. then upstairs, each one of the bedrooms has them. So okay. that's another energy efficiency aspect. So you don't have to turn on the heat in the house to heat up the one room that your family is in.
Right.
So it can be controlled in them. Right. And if we're not upstairs,
don't need it.
Then we just have a radiant floor heat, which is a closed system.
Yeah.
With our water heater, so there's just always warm water circulating through it.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, it's going to be very energy efficient.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we're running out of time here. I'd love to just ask what time frame you guys are looking at, if you have one, in terms of what people can expect, because there's obviously a lot of interest in this project. They can see things coming together a little bit. So
our goal obviously is to get into the house.
Yeah,
so
we want to get out of that RV.
We want to get out of the RV.
We know you guys are excited, but
and out of the parking lot. And the store will I work things in parallel with the store a little bit. So as you can see, we had the electrical done in the store.
Mm-hmm.
We have the plumbers in there.
Yeah.
I will have the HVAC contractors in there. So okay. those things are happening. But our emphasis right now is to finish the house out. We're almost to the stage where we can have it all drywalled. And then we're going to be finishes and ready to start moving in. So our goal is to be in the house in September.
Okay.
Wow.
And then shift.
Hard to believe standing here, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you're talking late September. So yeah. it's just the 3rd of August.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Fourth. Whatever.
Early. It's early it's August. Early.
It is.
And then we'll shift our attention to the store.
Sure.
So
cool.
Which, so I think to answer the question in full, the answer we're giving is we will open the store this winter.
Mm, okay. Cool. That gives you some wiggle.
A lot of wiggle.
We need a lot of wiggle.
Yeah. So. I love it. Very cool. And folks can stay in touch through the Facebook page and Facebook group, Whiskey
yes.
Hill Store.
Yep, yeah. And just are approving a full marketing plan with
cool.
our branding. Like, literally, that's what we were looking at
yeah.
in the RV when you pulled up.
Oh, awesome.
And I think we're just going to stamp it and say, yep, this is it, and they will begin working on our website.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Love
so,
that.
And I believe that's going to be whiskeyhillstore.com.
Should be.
Yeah, that's what we've.
I don't think there's another one.
Yeah. There isn't. We're able to save
that one.
The domain name. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So be looking for that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, we are so excited for you guys. Thanks for having us out once again. Yeah. And all your hard work is just, I commend you on it. It's so amazing to see it coming together. And it will be such a joy to see this amazing store when it does open sometime this winter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we appreciate your support. And we have our little porch store.
Yes.
That's just opened just a week ago today.
Yeah.
Just to get people used to the fact that they can actually stop here mm-hmm. and they're welcome and they can get a little ice cream, a little something cold to drink. And the support for that has been amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been awesome. So, you know, we've got all kinds of drinks out there, cold treats. So,
awesome.
Thanks for coming. We appreciate your support.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears?
even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling?
Or
that baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle.
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.